Hey everybody, it's the movie retrospective right before Halloween, so you knew that we had to do the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I'm actually kind of happy that I put it in the poll because I was like, well, duh, it's Halloween, so of course. But then I was afraid that it wouldn't win, but it won like overwhelmingly, so I'm good, because that was the one I wanted to do
It's hard
anyway.
to believe we haven't done this one.
I find it really hard to believe too. Well, the thing about Rocky Horror Picture Show, it's almost kind of like, I feel like it's one of those movies that is like transcended moviedom. It's not even really a movie anymore. It's like a cultural
It's an
phenomenon.
event.
I mean, the shit has been running continuously since 1975. I don't believe it's ever been out of theaters since 1975. And I don't think there's any other single movie in history that can say that.
And I had never seen it.
You had never seen it.
No. I saw like certain numbers out of it, like certain musical numbers, but I hadn't seen the whole thing.
But until we watched it other day, you had never sat and watched the whole thing?
Yeah, I've never
Holy
seen it.
crap!
I've never seen it.
That's
I just had no
amazing.
interest.
That's amazing.
And it was around when I was a little kid.
Well,
I remember
yeah,
seeing
like I said,
posters for
it's
it.
yeah, like I said, it's been
I was like,
around
why
since
are those people dressed that
1975.
way? You know, as I said, I didn't even know what it was. Why is he pointing that pitchfork at that man?
What? Oh
With
yeah,
the ray gun, it was in front of a
Oh,
pitchfork. Remember
okay.
that?
Yeah, okay. I was like, pitchfork? There's a pitchfork
No,
in
it's a chrome pitchfork. They just put
this.
a handle on the
Well, yeah, it's like
bottom
a
of the
laser
pitchfork
gun.
end, yeah.
I just didn't know what you're talking about because you
Yeah,
said
it's a
pitchfork.
pitchfork.
I was actually kind of lucky enough that when I was in high school in the late 1980s, I had never seen it either until then. But I had a cousin, my cousin Greg, who was a year or two older than me, and he was really into it, and he would go every week because even in the rednecky town of Daytona Beach, where we grew up, there was one theater that played it every Saturday night. And so he was kind of like a regular that went, and he's like, oh my God, I can't believe you're into all this goth shit and you've never seen it. So he took me to it one night, and then I don't know if you know, but when you go to the theaters to see it, if you've never seen it before, they always ask. And of course, if a friend takes you, it'd be like, virgin, virgin, like right here. So of course, they stand you up and humiliate you and stuff. So yeah, I had all of that done to me and stuff as well. So I think it's good because I saw it the first time the way, ideally you're supposed to see it in the theater with a cast, with a, participating audience, like with a whole bunch of people that brought all the props and like some people were dressed up. And like I said, we had a live cast as well. And honestly, one a girl that went to high school with me, she wasn't, I didn't know her, but she was like friend of a friend type. I think her name was, what was her name? Tara, Teresa, something like that. And she was actually the regular Magenta in the cast. And she looked a lot like her. She looked a lot like Patricia Quinn. And they had a really good, I remember they had a really good, Frank Infurter too, but he wasn't there all the time. Like they had like two or three different ones that would come in depending on who was available. But for a long time during my high school years and a couple of years after I graduated, me and a bunch of my friends would go like every Saturday night if we didn't have anything else going on. And I think even like when we went to prom, like our senior prom, and we were there for like an hour or two, and we're like, this shit's boring. Let's go to Rocky Horror. So we ended up going to Rocky Horror, like in our prom outfits, which I thought was kind of funny because we got like fucking bored at the fucking shit.
It was better quality than I had anticipated.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like lower budget.
No.
It's not. It's really just a musical, like any other musical from the period. I didn't really think there was. I don't know. I have really kind of any emotional connection to it. It's a musical. It's basically 1950s horror is what the
Yeah, horror
motif is,
sci-fi stuff, yeah.
but it also has like a not prog rock. What do you call that shit?
Glam rock.
Glam rock. It's like a glam rock motif.
And some kind of 50s rock and roll too
Yeah, and
in there.
50s mixed in with it. It's kind of reminded me of Phantom of the Paradise.
Well,
Something about
Phantom of
like
the
Phantom of the Paradise.
Paradise, the movie came out in 1974, and the movie Rocky Horror Picture Show came out in 1975. However, Rocky Horror Show, the stage musical, came out in 1973. So, Phantom of the Paradise, I don't know if they were working on it at the same time, because Phantom of the Paradise does definitely seem like it took some stuff from Rocky Horror, like the stage musical. So, it's possible that it could have, because it does have some of the same
Yeah, to be
aspects to
totally
it.
honest, I probably would take Phantom of the Paradise over
See,
Rocky
I know,
Horror.
I like Rocky
I
Horror,
think the
like, way
music was a
better.
little bit better in Phantom of the Paradise, and I like the story. Now, I could see that, the reason why this one stuck is because it has a quite a gender bending kind of fucking humor to it. You know what I mean? And it's because these aliens are transsexuals from Transylvania or some shit like that, yeah. You know? And it is funny. But it's just, I don't know. The performances were good. The music was pretty good. Most of the numbers were good. The story was ludicrous, you know, which it's supposed to be. And it kind of rips off Frankenstein and Dracula and everything else. It's just ripping off everything. 50s horror, too, you know. It's good. It's just... I think Phantom of the Paradise is a little bit better quality. I thought, you know.
See, I don't. I like Phantom of the Paradise, but I think Rocky Horror is way better. And honestly, I guess it's because, like I said, I started going to Rocky Horror, like the theater production, and it's still fun to like watch, you know, at home. And I hadn't done that for a long time, so I watched it on Hulu like a couple nights ago, and I was like, man, I forgot like how good, because I used to have the soundtrack and all that other kind of stuff. It is, like, way more fun to see with, like, audience participation. But to be honest, I think what ended up happening is because I saw it so many times in the theater. And if you've never been to see it, like, in the theater, you know, everybody's, like, yelling lines back at the screen. And then there's, like, a, you know, there's, like, a, you know, you get, everybody gets up and does the dances and shit like that. There's all this kind of script that you follow. And then there's like kind of a cast in front of the screen too, like acting the shit out. And so there's a lot of other chaos. And so I kind of feel like you get so into that, that you sort of like lose track of what's going on in the movie. So it wasn't until later on, like when I saw the movie, like when I bought it on DVD or whatever, and was able to watch it at home without all the other stuff going on, that actually I started to appreciate all the kind of littler stuff about the story and about, like, and even when I was watching it recently, like, there's, like, just little funny shit in there that I never really saw, like, the first several times I watched it because it was so much other stuff going on, you know what I'm saying?
I did like it, though, you know, and I think one of the best part about it is it has a really strong sense of humor. And I think a lot of the humor, in some ways, was frozen in time in a certain way. I don't know if it translates today exactly the way it was back then. In the era of glam rock, and even in the era of, like, early heavy metal, when, you know, and fucking Motley Crue and shit. Not early, well, it wasn't early. Early L.A. metal, you know. Like, Motley Crue showed up. There was kind of a... Those dudes are wearing their girlfriend's clothes. It was, it did kind of have a gender bending fucking look to it. This goes all the way back to like fucking, you know, New York Dolls and shit. I'm thinking even like to a certain extent, you know, David Bowie and everything, fucking Iggy Pop and all these guys fucking. But those guys were kind of trolling, you know. Well, this Rocky Horror Picture Show seemed to be trolling them to take it even to the next step where they were just going, it's straight up trannies, you know. That's, and it's kind of funny, you know, but that's how I interpreted the humor. They were just, it'd be like, make it, it's a rock opera, that's what it is. Well, imagine if you were doing a gothic opera, kind of like, you know, Repo Man did, but then you take it even to the next level where it's kind of trolling itself, where it's kind of a self-aware. That's what the tone seemed like to me. You know, and they're kind of, it's trolling, it was trolling rock music of the time, and also trolling the mainstream too, because a lot of people were still around from the 1950s, and they were probably pretty fucking stuffy to be around, so it was kind of trolling that, but it was also kind of homaging the horror of the 1950s, which was cheesy but fun, you know.
Well, and I really liked, and I think that if you're really into 50s B horror movies and sci-fi movies, as Richard O'Brien, who, you know, was the creator of this originally, as he was, there's a lot of really cool kind of like little in-jokes. I particularly like the addition of the criminologist who comes in, and he's very straight-faced and he's telling you what's going on.
Yeah.
It reminds me of like the dude from the dude from Mole People, and it's like there were so many like 50s horror movies that had that aspect where they would have a very serious, like, professional
dude.
Turns
out he's wearing pantyhose.
Come in. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he's getting up doing, like, fucking shit like that. Yeah, but I really like, and you know, them kind of, like, trolling the squares and everything.
Yeah, trolling.
But yeah, so Richard O'Brien Who, if you don't know, he played Riff Raff in the movie, but he was the one that wrote all the music and the lyrics. He sings some of the songs. He sings the opening song, double feature, science fiction double feature. He sings that and a couple of other ones in there. And so he was, he's English, but I think he lived in New Zealand for a really long time. And he was kind of doing like a lot of theater stuff. I think he was in like Jesus Christ Superstar and shit like that, like in London back in the early 70s. And I guess he got the idea for Rocky Horror because, like I said, he was really into, like you said, the sort of gender-bending glam rock type of thing, because he considered himself, I guess, transgender or third gender or something like that. He's like, I don't really identify.
Gender non-binary.
Well, yeah, he's like, I don't really identify with either one of them. It's, you know what I mean? I'm kind of in the middle somewhere.
Yeah.
So glam rock was kind of good, for those kind of people. It kind of gave him something to belong to. He was also really into 50s sci-fi, 50s horror, shit going back, even horror going back to the 30s. And he was also really into like 50s rock and roll. So he wanted to do a musical that would incorporate all of those things. Like, he's like, maybe like Frankenstein, like a mad scientist, but with like transgender elements and this kind of like crazy kind of shit. And so he wrote it like over a winter or something. And he knew this dude who was like an Australian guy, Jim Sharman, who Richard O'Brien had met when they were working on Jesus Christ Superstar. And Jim Sharman was like, oh yeah, we'll totally do that. So they started out like in this really, really small theater in London, but it was so successful that it eventually ended up going bigger and bigger, bigger theaters, and it ended up in the West End. So it was this big like cultural phenomenon. So then Jim Sharman was like, well, okay, well maybe we can do like a movie version of this. And then they ended up doing it in the US. And most of the cast, like Tim Curry as Frank Enfurter, who obviously
is the best fucking thing
about this movie. I could watch him all day long because he is just like, he just fucking leans right into it, man. Yeah. He's just like, he looks like he's having a fucking fantastic time.
Yeah.
And, but he was actually in most of the London stage plays. So they wanted most of the original cast, Little Nell, who played Columbia, Patricia Quinn, who played Magenta, you know, and obviously Richard O'Brien, who played Riff Raff. Those were all like original, they were all original stage cast. So they wanted them to be in the movie, but I don't know like who in the original stage musicals in the UK, I don't know who played Brad and Janet, but when they made the movie, they wanted American actors, obviously. So they got Barry Bostwick and Susan Sarandon to be in it. Now, interestingly, when this movie came out, as you might imagine, it was kind of not real successful. It was successful in LA. Like, people, like, dug
it
there.
Yeah, in a big scene. You'd understand it. Yeah.
But, and in some places in New York. But other than that, it was just kind of like, you know, it really didn't find much of an audience.
They wouldn't have understood this.
But what ended up happening, though, was that slowly what they started to do, because there had been some success with some other Midnight movies, like Reefer Madness was kind of one popular one, and some John Waters movies like Pink Flamingos and stuff. Like, they'd started showing them at midnight, and like weirdos would come up and see them. So then, like, they kind of go to some Fox executive, and they're like, why don't we do like a midnight movie shit with this and see how that goes? And they're like, all right, we'll see how that flies. And they started doing it, and then they noticed that in... like, it started out in big cities, like I said, New York, LA, stuff like that. But then they slowly noticed that it was, like, doing it around the country where the same people would turn up to see the movie, like, every weekend.
It became a thing.
And then they were starting to kind of come up with their own... you know, they're doing like a call and response type of thing where they're coming up with their own
like MST
lines.
They're responding to the movie.
Yeah, and so...
controlling the movie.
Yeah, it's weird, though, because, like, when I used to go back in high school, like I said, in the late 80s, early 90s, and I think this is true across, you know, I think scripts are different, like, no matter what theater you go to, but you gotta, like, adhere to the script. You can't just, like, fly off and, like, make up your own shit. Well, you can, but it has to be, like, super, super funny. Normally... there's a script and you have to adhere to it because otherwise you're not, like, not part of the club, you know what I mean? Because you don't know that particular, you know, city's script. Yeah. But everything kind of has its own thing. And I think there are some lines that are sort of, like, universal. And I think since, because I remember there had been, like, some bootleg records and stuff like that of the soundtrack, you know, of the movie with all the lines in it. And now, like, now we have the internet, so there's scripts all over the place.
Yeah, I
so you can
see
follow
why
along.
That would be successful, you know what I mean? Because you'd have something for the fucking weirdos to go do. it was, you know, like every weekend, kind of like a, if you didn't have a goth club.
Yeah.
And this predated all that shit, then you could go see this fucking flick. And it was like group participation and have a good time. You know, they're probably getting high and they're hooking up, you know. And it was kind of like an MST, watching an episode of MST, but you're the ones that fucking...
That are making stuff up.
Making stuff up. So I can see. And, you know, this is probably happening in places that didn't really have a good club scene, or maybe a lot of the kids were fucking too young to get into the club. So you could do that. But I'm thinking it was all ages, though.
Was this R? I mean, I guess it probably was. But, so, I guess if you're under 17, you couldn't get in there. But I kind of feel like there's...
That would have been rude.
But, I mean, you would just snuck in. Because I'm pretty sure I went in there before I was 17. I'm not really sure. I don't think they would have cared.
They didn't enforce that shit even when I was a kid.
But, yeah, so, yeah, this is definitely, you can see... But it's interesting because this seems to have happened... I mean, it did have a little bit of marketing. You know, they kind of marketed it, you know, at first. They actually tried to do a double feature with, you know, Phantom of the Paradise for a little while. Because they are very similar themed type of movies.
I could see this would be better for the group participation versus the fucking Phantom of the Paradise, though. Phantom of the Paradise is jam-packed full of a bunch of stuff, and it's more like something you just listen to.
Yeah.
You know, like Repo Man or something.
You mean Repo the Genetic Opera? I was going to correct you on that before because I think you said Repo Man. Like, that's a totally different movie.
Yeah, Repo Genetic Opera.
Yeah.
Or Little Shop of Horrors, you know.
Yeah, the thing about Rocky Horror Picture Show is that it's very aware of what it is. I mean, like I said, Richard O'Brien was really, really into 50s schlocky B movies and horror movies, and he was really into, like, you know, old horror, like classic horror, and he was trying to do, like, very deliberately trying to do a parody of that, but also like a loving homage to it. So that's why, you know, that's why there's certain things in there, and like even like the opening song references like a bajillion different like old sci-fi movies, like Tarantula and The Day the Earth Stood Still, and you know, he says like all the, you know, the actors that are in it and everything like that, because he was like really, really into that.
Tim Curry pulls that fucking role off. He's like, that's the best transsexual impersonator I've ever seen.
I have honestly, I had forgotten, because I've seen this movie a zillion times. I have like the poster, like another set of Jaws poster with the lips on it. I have that. Yeah. It's like, so I've seen it a million times. I have the soundtrack. I know all the songs by heart. But I hadn't seen it in a few years. Like, I hadn't actually sat and watched it. And when we watched it, it's actually, I think it's on Disney Plus, because Disney took over the company, you know, that owned it originally, and they allowed it to continue in theaters, because it still plays in theaters to this day, and people still go see it every weekend. But I saw it on Hulu. They put it up there for Huluween, which they do every year. But I hadn't sat and watched it for probably like 5 or 6 years at this point. And I had forgotten, I was like, goddamn, one, I forgot how good Tim Curry was in this. I mean, he's just like...
He's the best part about the movie.
I mean, well, yeah, I mean, easily. Yeah. But I also forgot how good the fucking songs were, like how catchy the songs were.
Meatloaf shows up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eddie.
Yeah, yeah, he does a good number. Everybody's good in it. Everybody's good in it.
And like I said, because I told you before, I didn't realize that you had never seen the movie.
No, I never seen it.
When we were watching it. That's like, that blows my mind. I thought everybody had seen it.
It did have, there was a fucking, kind of like a tone shift. It starts off kind of funny and positive. It starts to go kind of negative towards the end, or where it's a little bit of a downer. But that's just the part of the story. That's just the way the story goes. And the music kind of changes a little bit. At least it did for me. That was my impression of it.
Well,
it started to become a little bit of like a little bit downbeat, you know what I mean?
Cause
like,
well, it kind of goes into horror territory, into kind of hardcore horror territory. Because when it starts out... It's kind of from Brad and Janet's point of view, and they're sort of these wide-eyed, naive, virginal squares.
Oh, it's just fucking funny, because Frank and Ferd fucking fucked them both behind each other's back. And then she found out.
I never would have. Never.
It's funny, man, because they're aliens. You know what I mean? They're like fucking aliens from planet Transylvania. They're like these gothic...
Well, the planet is called Transsexual. The galaxy is called Transylvania.
Okay, the galaxy Transylvania.
Yeah. Get it right.
I couldn't get it. It's just, it's nonsense. It's just funny shit.
Well, that's what I mean. But it was very self-aware nonsense. Yeah. And like I said, if you're real into, you know, B-horror and stuff like that, it's like there's a lot of really funny shit in there. And honestly, some of this stuff that I had forgotten about, I mean, other than, like I said, Tim Curry is fucking, he's great in everything. I love Tim Curry. But this is just, you can tell that he is just having a fucking blast in this role. And like I said, he'd played it many times before because he played it on the stage. So you can tell that he's very comfortable in that role.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you can tell he knows what he's doing. He fucking hams that shit up. And then at the end, the alien cops show up. The alien transsexual cops show up. That was fucking good, too.
Well, they weren't cops. It was Riff Raff and Magenta.
Yeah, I know. But they were, like, in their cop uniforms. That's how I fucking interpreted it.
Well, I think that was just their native. That's what they would wear, like, if they weren't on Earth.
The way I interpreted it is that they were kind of, like, undercover cops. And that now they're pulling rank. they're going to arrest him and shit. You know what I mean?
Oh, it might have been.
That's how I interpreted
it. Well, see, because I don't know.
They're going to take him back to his fucking home world and shit. But then it turns out now he's going to kill him, you know?
Well, yeah, they wanted to kill him. Yeah. Well, because what had ended up happening was that, essentially, I don't think they spell this out in the movie, but it's implied that however long they've been on Earth, you know, Dr. Frank has been
making,
like,
these,
well, there, well, he's like, he made Riff Raff and Magenta into servants. They were servants, and he was like mean to them.
Okay.
Because he was just kind of, he was always kind of like, you know, he made Riff Raff call him master, and he was like whipping him and stuff. So he was like an Igor type character.
Yeah.
So after a while, like when, you know, when Frank was kind of distracted or weakened or whatever, him and Magenta, who were brother and sister, by the way, they decided they were going to like drop their nuts and like take back over and get rid of him and then go back to, because I guess he made them come to Earth like, maybe I'm thinking too much about it. I think he made them come to Earth like without their, like they didn't want to.
In my limited fucking understanding of the movie, we've seen it, watched it the first time, I thought that somehow they were kind of like undercover cops, or they had become alien cops.
Oh, see, that would be funny.
And that they were going to bring him to justice. That's how, because they showed up in those new outfits. I thought they were uniforms.
See, I thought they were uniforms too, but I thought they were just saying, it's like, fuck this Earth shit. This is our, like, our native garb from their planet. Yeah. You know, because I got the impression that Frank had brought them there, like, against their will and was, like, making them be his servants.
Yeah.
Because that's what he treated them like.
Yeah.
Now, Columbia,
he makes a muscle man. That's the best part of it.
Yeah.
And gives him a bunch of weights as a present.
That song, I can make you a man, is, like, so fucking funny. Yeah. Every single song in this is so fucking good. Like, all the lyrics are funny. It's, like, all the, like I said, if you know all the lyrics and stuff, like, the lyrics are fucking hilarious. And Richard O'Brien wrote all those. But it's, like, but, yeah, so, but Columbia is not an alien, though. I think she's just, because even at the beginning when they do, like, they're introducing everybody, that she's just a groupie. So I think she was just like a person that fell in love with Frank, and he kind of like let her hang around the castle, and then he fell in love with Eddie, who was Meatloaf's character, and then Eddie and Columbia kind of fell in love, and then Frank decided he didn't want Eddie around anymore, so he was going to make Rocky the muscle man. So it's like I said, it seems like it's just really weird coming at it where, you know, having seen it so many times, I probably saw it like 200 times in a theater situation, you know, with everybody yelling out their lines and everything. And so in that situation, everybody's throwing toast and rice and shit like that at the screen, hot dogs and whatever at the screen. Which they used to do also.
Clean that shit up.
I always used to feel bad for like the theater. They were like, God damn it, the fucking Rocky Horror people. I think after a while, because at first they'd let you like bring anything, right? But then after a while they're like, okay, well, you can bring, you know, X, Y, you can bring newspaper, you can bring rice, you can be, but enough with the toast and the hot dogs and that kind of stuff. Like, we don't want to clean up like rotten food and shit. But it's like, so you can bring playing cards and stuff like that. But there was some things that most theaters wouldn't allow you to bring just because it was gross and unsanitary. But for a while in the 70s, I felt bad for like the people that worked in the theaters back then, because they probably had to clean up all kind of terrible things. But yeah, so seeing it so many times in that environment, I never really paid attention to the story, because I was kind of like into the songs and like remembering all the lines and everything. But when I was watching it again recently, I was kind of like, this is actually a pretty good story. There's like a lot going on in there that I didn't pick up on the first, because I wasn't like really listening to everybody's dialogue. But there is actually a story going on in there. And like I said, it's actually like a much smarter story than I think I gave the movie credit for a long time, just because I was just kind of into the songs and following along and having a good time and checking out everybody's costumes and stuff like that. But I was like, it does actually have a really good story. And honestly, even though you say like the end is a downer, I really, really like that whole end sequence, the floor show sequence, with it starts out with with Rose Tint My World, and then they go into, and then the song is like gets sadder and sadder, and then finally Frank gets killed, spoiler alert, and then the whole castle like takes off and like goes back to the planet. Yeah. So I guess they brought the whole castle like to the fucking,
it's just ridiculous.
It's ridiculous on purpose.
Yeah.
And I think that because of that, it's interesting that Phantom of the Paradise, which, like I said, probably came out like a year or two before this. Although, like I said, the stage show for this had come out prior to Phantom of the Paradise. So Rocky Horror Show, the stage musical, was already a little bit of a phenomenon before the movie came out. Not so much in the U.S., but I guess in the U.K. But when the movie came out here, it's like it didn't do all that well, except in the big cities and everything. But then it really seemed to like strike a chord in the way that Phantom of the Paradise really didn't. And I'm not sure, because like I said, they're very similar. And yeah. I know you like Phantom of the Paradise better. I honestly think Rocky Horror is a lot better. I love Phantom of the Paradise. Don't say that. Don't like think I'm saying that. But I think Rocky Horror, I said the songs are more memorable. I think I just like the tone of it better. It's a lot more fun. It's a lot more tongue in cheek. It's a lot more self-aware. Maybe because it's more, I don't know.
Phantom of the Paradise is nowhere near as over the top as Rocky Horror. Rocky Horror is absurd.
Like I said, it's like fun though.
Yeah.
And even there's like really over the top horror elements, like when Eddie gets killed, like Frank kills Eddie with a pickaxe and then they eat him.
Yeah.
Like they kind of pulls the thing off the table and like there's a coffin under there and he's all cut up. And it's like, I love that dinner scene too, like where they're eating the meat, which just kind of looks like a big whatever, and he's cutting it with that one of those Hamilton Beach like automatic like carving knives or whatever, which always cracks me up for some reason. And so they're eating, and then the doctor guy was like, Dr. Scott, he's like, I came here to talk to you about Eddie. And Frank's chewing, he's like, that's a little bit of a tender subject. And then they all realize at the same time that they're all eating him. And then they're just like, oh. It's just like, it's just little moments like that. Like that whole dinner scene where Brad is like looking in all the cups are mismatched and he's like looking in the mug and he's like wiping it all off like it's gross, and just like little things like that where, you know, the one part where Riff Raff and Magenta are like laughing in each other's faces like over the chair like ha ha, and then he goes shut up. And it's just like shit like that. I don't know, just like little things like that crack me up more than anything, and I think I appreciate them more now than I did when I first saw it, because all these like little details I think I missed, even though I'd seen it like a zillion times.
Yeah, I can't comment on the live fucking shit where you throwing shit. I've never been to it.
Oh, it was super fun. I used to go every weekend for years and years.
I'm just giving my review of it based on the movie that we saw, and just based on the movie that I saw, it's a good movie. It's a good musical. It's very rock opera. The acting's real good. The dancing's really good. It's got fucking outrageous sense of humor to it. It's good. I see why a cult has sprung up around it. If you like Rocky Horror and haven't seen Phantom of the Paradise, see that.
Yeah, similar.
You'll like that too. It's a Phantom of the Opera style story about rock stars. It's good. It's good. It's not as, I guess you could say it doesn't have kind of like a gendered theme, like a gender bending theme. It doesn't really have that, no more than normal rock music had back then, because it was like that. I'd put them on par with one another, actually, on par. But the music wise, the songs, I like the Phantom of the Paradise better. It was a little more sophisticated music in terms of just like musically a little more sophisticated. It almost sounded like greatest hits that you've heard before, but it wasn't. It was just shit they pulled out of their ass. On Phantom of the Paradise.
Yeah, although I'm sitting here right now and I'm trying to think of like some of the songs from Phantom of the Paradise, and yeah. I can only think of one. I can't think of the other ones. But maybe, like I said, that's probably because I've seen Rocky Horror a zillion times.
Yeah, and I've only seen Phantom of the Paradise like once. Yeah. So I couldn't repeat any of those songs. But every time I heard them, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's a takeoff on a Bowie song. Or like, okay, yeah, that's a takeoff on a damn, you know. It just sounded, everything sounded familiar. In Phantom of the Paradise.
Interestingly, too, then, now that you bring up David Bowie, Sue Blaine, who did the costumes for this, and whoever, I can't remember who it was that did the makeup for the movie, because I think they, you know, changed up the makeup for the movie from the stage play a little bit, but whoever did the makeup for the Rocky Horror Picture Show movie was had worked with David Bowie as well as Mick Jagger. So they got, like, rock star people, and Sue Blaine, who did the costumes, actually, she kind of thinks, and maybe this is the case, is that the whole, like, torn fishnet thing, like, the makeup, the hair, and stuff like that, she kind of credited that with maybe being influential on the punk scene, yeah. like, later on, which I can totally see. Because she said she didn't really look into a lot of, she just kind of, like, winged it when she was making the costumes for this. And didn't really look into a lot of other things that were going on. So she claims that, you know, that some of the stuff that shows up in Rocky Horror was influential on the punk, so she was kind of, like, sure. really influential in, punk, in punk fashion. Yeah, I mean, big
goth.
Time. And the thing
There's
about it...
There's stuff in this that's goth.
Yeah, this and really yeah, and like you said, I kind of feel like... Even I know that
Pookie.
In the early 70s, yeah, Pookie's been.
She's loving all the treats.
She's being bad.
She wants us to open those treats. She can smell them.
Yeah, I know.
It's she's a new flavor. She's like, I've never had that flavor.
It's the tasty human flavor.
Yeah, that's the Halloween flavor. She, you can smell right through that.
She wants to eat a human.
I'm gonna give it to you.
She wants to eat a human.
She's looking at me. I'm gonna give it to you. After
but,
the show.
Yeah, it's just kind of like I know that there was a lot of this sort of stuff going on in the early 70s, but. Watching it, and honestly, I'm kind of like watching it again now in 2021. I'm kind of like amazed that they got away with what they got away with in this movie. I mean, there's a lot of shit that I was like laughing my ass off at, like the one scene where, you know, I love the two like doubling scenes where Frank goes in there and like seduces Janet first and then goes and seduces Brad, like with pretty much the same lines, and he's just kind of like, no, oh, okay, whatever. And they just kind of do it. It's kind of in silhouette, but it's like he totally looks like he's like giving him a BJ, and it's like yeah. just really, really funny.
Yeah.
And then like they show the kind of thing afterward where Brad's like sitting there smoking, and Frank's like laying back there in bed, all looking satisfied and shit. And it's just like funny, and it's like funny to me that they got away with that like in 1975, I guess.
Well, in the 70s, you got away with a lot of shit.
That's what I'm saying.
There was shit that they were doing back then that you could have never gotten away with from that. Damn Brooke Shields stuff and fucking, what was that, Pretty Baby?
Well, yeah, that underage stuff.
Underage
like,
stuff
yeah.
was going on.
Yeah. But I'm talking about
I'm
just,
Hope.
Yeah, she's being
okay,
really
Okay, Brooke, I'm going to give it to you.
We have to give her the treats because
yeah,
otherwise
we'll give the treats
her. She's going to, we're not paying attention to her,
treats.
So she's like.
Did you give her one or something?
No, I didn't give her
How
anything.
How does she know? She guess she can
smell it.
Smell right through
she
that.
She smells
huh?
through the, yeah.
Okay, you're going to smell right through
yeah,
that.
Yeah, tasty human flavor.
Okay.
Ilsa says.
Look at her, look
those.
At where she's sitting. She's gone. Yeah, I want some.
With her, she's with her big eyes.
Come here, let me give you some. Take those. She's like, I've never had those. Yeah. All right.
But yeah, it's like it's just like I said, it's kind of blowing my mind that you had never seen this whole
Not
entire
never
movie. Because I thought, because you know, you were kind of like a musical guy.
Yeah.
In school and everything, and
yeah, I just
you've,
never,
you've
well,
been in a lot of musicals.
Well, to see this when I was in high school, you had to go to the theater to see it. You
yeah,
probably could get it on VHS, but that, we were going to rent that. We were going to rent, you know, it's like a, what we would consider to be like a real horror movie or something. Because you had to pay back then.
And honestly, yeah. I still remember when this movie, when Rocky Horror Picture Show first came out on VHS in the 90s. And I remember going to Media Play because I wanted to buy it because I was very excited that it was coming out. Because I'd never seen yeah. it outside of a theater setting.
Yeah.
That bitch was like 98, 99.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, on for VHS.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of like, yep, can't afford that.
Yeah, they weren't playing back then.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Well, and I kind of feel like back in the old days, that's why they were so, they'd get so mad if you, like, didn't bring the movies back, because they're like, look, those are, like, $300 each. You know what I mean? It wasn't like now where everything's just, like, fucking throwaway. But, yeah, back then, and so I couldn't afford it. So I didn't get it for a really long time until, like, the prices came down and then, you know, it came out on DVD and shit like that. And then I had it then. But... so just recently, do you remember, like, when was it? Like, a couple years back? You remember when Fox was doing the live shit? And they did Grease, and that was great, actually. We saw that a couple of times. They did Rocky Horror Picture Show as well. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to see it. You know, it was live on TV, and then they would, like, reshow it. And, but I never got around to seeing it. And then, like, a couple of our friends saw it and said, oh, it wasn't all that good. So I never bothered watching it. But now I'm kind of, like, curious to see, like, how it came out. Because, I don't know. I mean, I kind of feel like I wouldn't mind seeing, like, a modern staging of this. Although, as I said, the movie, you really can't beat Tim Curry in that role. It's like, I really can't. Yes, I've seen, like, a lot of other... You know,
he's running that show.
I mean, I've seen a lot of other people play him, like, in live casts and the theaters and stuff over the years. But, I mean, he just owns that role so much. And he just owns this. I mean, everybody in this movie is great. I just love this whole movie. I love all the songs and everything. But just that one moment when he comes down the elevator, you know what I mean, with the cape and, like, just, like, fucking throws that cape off and shit. It's just so fucking great. What a great introduction.
I think Tim Curry's career was kind of built on this role. His performance in this, actually. I think that basically...
I think this and Clue are my favorite ones of his. Yeah, have you ever seen Clue?
No.
Oh. Yeah, he's good in that, too. But, you know, obviously this one's, like, super over the top. And he's, like, real sexy in this one, too.
Well, like, you know, his facial expressions and the way he moves and everything, you know you're dealing with a really, really good performer, real good actor.
And just, like, I mean, just he belts those fucking songs out. And then they said that, I guess, early on in the production when he was still doing the stage musical, he decided that he thought, for whatever reason, that Dr. Frankenfurter should talk very, very posh. Yeah. He's like, he should talk like the Queen of England.
Yeah.
So he does, like, this super, super posh, like, yes, he has an English accent, but he, like, poshed it up for this. So for some reason, like, that really worked, like, that combo. But, yeah, he just fucking owns this, like, so much. And it's just, I mean, it's everything about it is perfection. Every little, and it just, even, like, it's a very physical performance, which I had forgotten about. And, like, watching him run around that castle in those big, glittery high heels with the cape. Yeah, like, running up the ladders and shit like that. And I was like, wow, I had forgotten, like, how physically taxing this role was and how just, I mean, when he's, that scene where he's, like, chasing Rocky, like, around the room where the tank is, and he just keeps, like, running and, like, falling down and, like, shaking his fist at him and all this. And just, like, it's just a great... comedic, like, physical performance, and I had forgotten a lot of the aspects of it. So it was really, like I said, it's really nice to watch it without all the other stuff going on, even though that's fun, but it's nice to watch it because you can actually appreciate it as a movie and as a musical, which you can't really do.
Runs around, does all these fucking action scenes and shit in a damn fucking negligee.
In a corset.
In a merry widow with suspenders and shit.
And like I said, this big fucking...
grown man.
I'm like, well, good on him, because I sure...
big old fucking heels and shit.
Because I'm a girl and I can't run around in heels like that. So fuck, man. And it's just... and it's funny, too, because at the end, when they do the floor show part, where they have, like, Brad and Janet and all that, like, Brad, he's supposed to be, like, a square... so when they put him in the heels and the fishnets and he's out there dancing and he's all, like, kind of flopping around like a dork, but they make that, you know, that's what makes it funny, is that he's, you know, obviously not, he's not used to wearing them the way Frank is. So he's not, like, real comfortable in it, but it's just, I don't know. I just,
he's losing her mind.
Poke. I know.
Poke.
What's the matter, Poke?
She knows there's another flavor there.
She's like, yeah, I want to try that one.
See,
too.
Look.
She's like, let me try this one now. Let me try this one.
Let me try that one. Oh, okay. Knock the shit down. Knock it down.
She knocked it off.
Knock it down. She looked at me. This one. Okay.
Open this, please. I can't open it. But yeah, so, if you guys have seen the Fox one, let me know what that's like. But, and also, if you guys have been to any of the, if you saw this in the theater live, like I did, like I said, I think that's kind of cool that that was my first introduction to it. Even though I love it as a movie, and I like to just sit and watch it, you know, now, because I can appreciate all the stuff in it, all the songs and everything. But I like that I first got to... You're so noisy.
I'm just doing what I gotta do.
I like that I first got to experience it, like, when I was in high school, in that setting. And just goes to show, even though this came out way back in 1975... This weekend, which if you're watching this at some other time, this is Halloween weekend 2021. This is going up on the Friday. Tomorrow night, Saturday, October 30th, Mannequins in downtown Sanford is doing a Rocky Horror Night. Everyone's supposed to come dressed like Rocky Horror characters. They're going to show all the thing. So shit's still going strong nowadays, this many decades later. So just goes to show. So anyway, have a happy Halloween, everybody. And we will see you guys on the next one. Bye.